He's the columnist covering college football and more for USA Today. Either grab the red section of the publication, visit usatoday.com online, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, how are you on this final Wednesday of October?
Man, I'm good. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on a second. My microphone just fell off. That only happens to you in studio.
Yeah, you've been in this chair, and the microphone literally didn't kind of dip. It just separated itself and fell onto the console. There's a new one for you. So
live radio.
Yeah,
there you go.
Normally, we start with the week that was, but you're going to be headed to Iowa City and the home of the Hawkeyes. And last month, we learned about something that is just flat out uplifting. So for folks who have not heard the story, it's called The Wave. There's a place called the Stead Family Children's Hospital. So that's kind of a little preview. What could you tell the folks about this amazing new tradition?
So the Stead Family University of Iowa Children's Hospital has been around, but it's sort of been in the University of Iowa hospital system in various places, and they built a freestanding structure. It became its own thing, and it's a brand new building that opened in January that looms over Kinnick Stadium, where the Hawkeyes play on the campus. And so, knowing this was going to be the case, they built a 12th floor sort of viewing area. You know, everybody was happy with that, both at the school and the children's hospital. And it was going to be this cool place for the kids to watch. So to make a long story short, an Iowa fan said, hey, what could we do to acknowledge the kids' presence? And she said, why don't we wave? And it became this organic thing, started organically, and it's become this tradition where between the first and second quarters, everybody in the stands below turns and waves up at the kids in the children's hospital. And some of them are in that 12th floor room they call the press box. Some of them are in their rooms in the floors below that happen to look out onto the stadium. But it's become a really neat thing. And I'm sure many of your listeners have seen various video profiles. ESPN did one. Fox has done one. There have been stories about it online. But USA Today wanted to do one. And so I'm going to go up there. They're playing Minnesota. It's not a big football game, but it's not really about the football game at all. I'm hoping to spend some time with a young boy and his family who spent a lot of time in that hospital. And, you know, some of your listeners know the story of our son, Christopher.
Sure.
From when I was in Eugene at the Register Guard. And we spent an awful lot of time in different children's hospitals. And so I feel like I know a little bit about what those parents are going through. And, you know, hopefully I can do what's going on justice through the eyes of a patient and his family.
Yeah, you know.
So I'm excited about it, and I've got a little bit of trepidation about it, too, to be quite honest with you.
Right, and like you said, we don't have to tell you when a child has a serious medical issue, you know, you can go about your work, you can socialize, you could even laugh, but not 5 seconds pass where it's not at the front of your mind. So for the families and kids, just to get this kind of acknowledgement, to have a moment to kind of forget maybe the frightening circumstances they're facing, I mean, just how tremendous is that?
Right. I think I really do think it's very meaningful to those families. I mean, you know, if people have seen this wave and seen some of the features that have been done on it, you know, you kind of get misty. And I have to tell you, I don't know that I get any more sentimental than anybody else about it, but I think maybe I do because I think our family understands a little bit, and there's some listeners out there who understand too. We understand a little bit maybe what that must be like. For people to say, hey, we see you. We know you're in there. We know you're fighting day after day. So I'm going to get a lump in my throat if we keep up on this topic.
All right, I'll move along. I'm just looking forward to it. Let's go to the Pac-12. USC and Washington, the favorites to win their divisions, play for the title. You know, Southern Cal annually faces that overrated question, finished strong last year. Washington, of course, was in the playoff. They lost to Arizona State. You saw Washington State get smoked by Cal. So considering what you might have thought late in August, is the league a little down, you know, headed that way, or maybe not a great team, or more data needed?
Well, listen, I think there's a lot of questions right there, and I'll just start with this. I don't know if the league is down, you know, it may well be that there's a bunch of decent teams in the league, and that the problem is there are no elite teams, a couple of good teams, no elite teams. And, you know, sometimes you can have a league that's really tough, but it's not built for the playoffs. The SEC, for example, is not very good right now, top to bottom. But what it's got is one elite team, maybe two if Georgia's won two. And that's actually a good recipe to get to the playoffs. What's not a good recipe to get to the playoff is if you've got some good teams, but no elite teams, and you've got some teams that can also beat you on a given night because they're pretty good. And that could be what the Pac-12 has. I'm not ready to say that, but that could be what they have. I will say this. The Pac-12 is in grave danger of being left out of the playoff. And frankly, at this point, if Washington doesn't run the table, I don't think they're getting in. And even if Washington does, there's a very good chance that it's still the one that gets left out, or that it's one of two conferences that gets left out if Notre Dame keeps winning.
Yeah,
I think, you know, and so obviously, I'm guessing there's a lot of people listening to you right now who are going, well, in that case, we don't want the Pac-12 to be in the playoffs. I know what they think about the Huskies, and I understand Washington State has one loss. I get it. I don't think anybody's buying them as a playoff contender at this point.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. In the Pac-12, the past 2 weeks, a couple of crazy finishes. Utah scores in the last minute. Last Saturday, Arizona at Cal in double overtime. In each case, the road team goes for two in the win, and neither make it. So while bold calls by Kyle Whittingham and Justin Wilcox, did they need to do that? What did you make of those calls by the Utah and Golden Bear coaches?
Well, I understood what they were doing, especially in the case of Kyle Whittingham. You're on the road. You led at one point by a couple touchdowns, and USC had come back to you know, actually take the lead. And now you've come back to where, you know, you've sort of righted the ship, and you've got the score, and you're like, okay, I don't think we can hold these guys off in overtime, so we need to go ahead and try to win it right here, because it's pretty clear their defense wasn't going to be able to stop USC. I get that. Similar thinking, I think, for Justin Wilcox, you know, rather than going on into the next overtime. You know, it's easy to second-guess them. I actually think that I don't ever want to second-guess a coach for going for the win. You know, let me put it this way. If you're the lesser team, then I'm glad that you go for the win. And I think in both cases that was true.
You know, I mentioned USC earlier, and they had some close calls, and then, geez, they got routed at Notre Dame. And like you said, now the Irish are back in the picture. You know, their only loss was by a point on a late drive to number 3 Georgia. They won 4 games last year. So, be it hiring a new defensive coordinator, they've got a new quarterback, you know, the emergence of Josh Adams as an elite back. How amazing has this turnaround been?
Well, it's been pretty good. I mean, you know, Brian Kelly was supposedly on the hot seat. I don't think in reality, but was supposedly on the hot seat after going 4-8 a year ago. He made a lot of changes and told us all about it over and over again. And, you know, you just sort of a wait-and-see thing. Well, now we've waited and we've seen. You know, didn't play very well against Georgia in week 2, I want to say it was.
Yeah.
Didn't play very well against Georgia, or probably would have won that game. But has what they've got is run game, as you mentioned. You know, they've got a really good offensive line. They're pounding the ball a lot. What I want to know is, the other thing I took out of last week against USC was just how disappointing the Trojans have been, because it is a talented team, but they didn't take any, you know, all that momentum they supposedly had coming out of the Rose Bowl. Just, you know, I don't know, the hype train left the station way too fast, which, you know, it can certainly happen with a USC or what, but they just haven't been what we thought they would be, and so it's really disappointing. Now, meanwhile, I actually think this Notre Dame team has a chance to actually, you know, I think it's actually been underrated, which is a crazy thing to say about a Notre Dame team.
Right.
Up until this week. But the idea that they're going to run the table from here out is still hard to me, because it's hard for anybody to do that. That they're going to win out in the second half of the season, which is what it would take. I mean, they could lose this week against NC State. That's a really good North Carolina State team that nobody's talking about. You got Notre Dame coming off a big, big win. They've been fed what Nick Saban would call rat poison all week long about how good they are and where they're headed. And NC State is under the radar. So You know, and if they don't lose to them, you know, they got to go to Miami. I don't know how good Miami is, but obviously they're unbeaten. And they also have to play at Stanford, which is a very, very good team that's just out of the playoff mix because it has the two losses. So I'm not ready to say Notre Dame's going to run the table. Let's say one thing, though. If they do run the table, they're going to get in the playoff, and they're going to, that's going to knock two conference champions out of the mix.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of doubt with what they have left. They went out there in. You started the season at Florida State, Alabama. Tight game until the Seminoles lost their starting quarterback, DeAndre Francois. But we've talked about, you know, you were of the opinion that, man, they still have so much talent. But, man, they've lost three in a row at home. You saw Jimbo Fisher getting into it with a fan. How bad have things kind of deteriorated? And it's kind of surprising for a program that's been so strong now for the last half decade?
Well, it really is surprising. And look, DeAndre Francois, that's a big loss, obviously. But we're not talking about losing Deshaun Watson or Baker Mayfield or Justin Herbert. We're just talking about a solid quarterback. And look, Herbert doesn't belong, you know, he's not in that category at this point, so I'm not trying to overestimate him, but he was so important to Oregon, and he was so, you know, he frankly ranked him in that upper echelon of the Pac-12 quarterbacks. So it's not like losing one of those guys, but they had nothing behind him, and I think we all underestimated just the impact of losing a guy who was savvy and strong, even if he wasn't a great playmaker. He was just a strong leader, and James Blackman, a true freshman, just not ready to do that. Even with all that, though, when you watched them against Alabama, Steve, it looked like they matched up, you know, pretty much across the board in terms of the same kind of size and skill and speed and talent and that kind of stuff. And what's pretty clear is they must not, because, you know, they should overwhelm some of the teams they play just with talent. And they haven't done that. And I think the biggest piece of this maybe is this. Their offensive line, as it turns out, just isn't very good. Because if their offensive line was better, they'd be able to run the football enough, and then that would take some pressure off of the quarterback, Blackman, and they'd win some games. But now all of a sudden they're 2-4. Could have won a couple of those games, but they haven't. And you've got to wonder, you know, where do they go from here?
Well, we'll find out. Finally, next week, we get the first rankings from the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. I know that's your favorite thing, but it's going to be a coming. We've got big games this weekend that'll make an impact. So here on the 25th of October, if you had to make the decision of the four teams who get into the College Football Playoff and it starts next week, who are you going with?
So in other words, through the games of last week was the end of the regular season. That's the question.
Yes.
I don't have to forecast who wins this Saturday.
No, not just yet.
Okay. Alabama is your one seed in that case.
Sure.
The problem with this is you can't project conference champions right now, and so you can't apply the importance of who won a conference championship, which would push you over one of the teams in here. Alabama's number one, TCU's number two, no, probably Penn State's number two, TCU's number three, and right now, Georgia's number four. And now, Georgia's getting a lot of mileage out of beating Notre Dame, winning at Notre Dame, and frankly, they should. But they haven't played anybody other than that. They'll have a couple of tests here and later in the year, the second half of the season, and we'll see what happens. And I am not one of those who thinks the SEC is going to get two teams in with this, you know, unless Alabama's the team that loses an SEC title game. But if Georgia's 12-0 and loses a close game to Alabama in the SEC title game, unless there's chaos in the other leagues, Georgia ain't getting in, despite what we keep hearing. That's the scenario that everybody wants to project. But right now, Steve, if I have to pick a playoff four right now, they're in it. And frankly, the next team probably is Clemson. If I had to say who's the team that's out, because they still have a bunch of good wins, it's just that they took a bad loss, and the four teams ahead of them in my ranking haven't gotten beaten.
And as always, I like to trouble you with this. Those would be my four right now. So you really need to reevaluate your whole evaluation.
Oh, man. Well, let me think through it here.
Throw Wisconsin
no,
in there.
I think you've got it right now. Now, let me just say this. I truly don't think that we're going, this is the year that, unless there's a lot of goofiness happening everywhere else, this is not the year where we see two teams from one conference. This is not the year where we see, the Wisconsin beat an unbeaten Penn State in the Big Ten title game and they both get in. This is not the year when we see, unless Alabama loses in its title game, and at that point, all bets are off because the committee loves them some Alabama. I don't blame them. That's right. The only way.
All righty. Well, you travel safe to Iowa City. Look forward to the story, and we will chat next Wednesday to get November off and rolling. Great stuff.
Unbelievable.
Great stuff as always, George. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right.